US President Trump wants to revoke security clearances for former officials who've criticized him over Russia. The White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders says Trump is looking to take away clearances for half a dozen former senior national security and intelligence officials. John Cypher is a former CIA official who served for 28 years. He's also been critical of President Trump. John, thanks for joining us on RN Drive.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Are you one of the former officials being targeted?
Not yet, at least, no.
Okay, so far so good. Is this unprecedented to have presidents suggest this or do this?
It is unprecedented. In general, security clearances are given or taken away based on security reasons, on, you know, misuse of classified information or some sort of security thing. Whereas in this case, it clearly is a political punitive measure. And so that is very unusual. I think the president has the authority to do that, but really it's surprising to be use these things for political purposes.
So what does it mean to lose a security clearance?
Well, yeah, that's interesting too. So it's, you know, when someone retires from the intelligence agencies, they lose their access to classified information. However, their clearances remain active for a couple years and can be reactivated as necessary. Some of the most senior officials, like former CIA directors or NSA directors, will often be able to use those clearances because they'll get involved in advisory boards or commissions looking at different things. And so, but in general, it doesn't have that much of a meaning because, you know, when you retire, you don't have access, you don't need access to classified information. But it does send a message through the workforce that you need to agree with the president or there's a chance you could lose your clearance. Sort of a loyalty test, if you will.
Yeah, you've been critical, as I said, of President Trump, saying he's prepared to undermine his own US intelligence. Would this be a further blow to morale of people working in that vast network?
Yeah, I think the intelligence services here and the people who work there are pretty resilient. You know, they put their head down and they work around the world and they take their job pretty seriously. So I don't think that, you know, their morale is that important. I think they're going to do their job and do it to the best of their ability in any case. But the sort of wearing away of these norms and a wearing away of these sort of things that we've counted on and to have our institutions be nonpartisan, nonpolitical, this president seems to be pushing away at those and trying to make our institutions more political in nature. And that over time, that's a real problem.
Last night, we spoke with former KGB spy Jack Barsky, who described President Trump as a complete novice in foreign affairs with no understanding of history. Do you agree with that characterization?
I do.
I'm glad that we've clarified that there's agreement. But if you could expand on that, what does that mean? I mean, in terms of this claim that he has no knowledge of history, what's the evidence for that?
Well, obviously, you know, he's a businessman. He's been a person who's, you know, had an important role in New York and in society and those type of things. But it doesn't appear that he's taken his job or his oath tremendously seriously. So we even saw it as he was running for president, you know, over here, there's a number of debates, you know, with the other party candidate. And each one of those debates, you know, most people prepare quite a bit so that they're knowledgeable on the issues. And there was no evidence that President Trump, between those debates, tried to learn anything new. He benefited by sort of attacking and providing simple bromides. But his knowledge of international affairs and foreign policy doesn't seem to have improved over time. You know, he's had access now to his diplomats and his intelligence officers providing him information. But then when he's shown up on the international stage, he hasn't shown that he's listening tremendously well.
Does that play well for President Vladimir Putin, that lack of experience of Trump in that relationship in those conversations?
Despite his lack of sort of experience or knowledge, he is a very confident person and he believes his personality can win all. But I do think most national security professionals here, to include those in his administration, thought it was an unwise idea to meet Putin at this time. You know, President Putin's been in office for almost 20 years. He's a skilled and former KGB officer who's dealt with many, many presidents and prime ministers and things around the world. Also, he was in a weaker position. You know, it's not clear the United States needs much from Russia other than for them to change the way they do things. And so he walked into that summit in a weakened state, that Putin had a lot to gain and President Trump did not have much to gain. And therefore, he put himself in sort of a difficult position.
This issue in relation to Iran has certainly boiled over. These heated Twitter exchanges, seen by some as a diversion tactic to take the public eye away from the Mueller probe. Does this assessment make sense to you?
Well, you know, everybody here is wondering the same things, and I don't know that anyone has figured it out. I mean, it either is a diversion from personal problems and legal problems that are happening here, or it is a potential diversion from criticism related to Russia and the problems with the summit last week, or it's just him trying to change the narrative. And so, you know, we saw this also with North Korea and China and now with Iran. And so it's certainly unprecedented and it's very unusual. And it doesn't relate probably to the kind of briefings he's getting on these issues. And so it's really hard for all of us to understand what exactly he has in mind.
It does feel like the president's international rhetoric has moved literally from region to region, you know, North Korea, then Russia, now Iran, as these stories have emerged in terms of the kind of language he's using, the way he's had these meetings, clearly lots of people critiquing all of that. But what do you make of this Twitter war? Because, yes, sure, the president tweets out in his very way that we've gotten used to President Trump communicating in these capitals and this very different way to past presidents. But then he's got it back in spades, hasn't he, from the Iranian leadership?
He has. It's a tough one to figure out. So he is doing this, and we almost are starting to figure out his playbook here. But on the other hand, at the end of the day, he's the president of the United States. He has access to the largest and most powerful military in the history of the world, and he has huge responsibilities around the world. And so, yes, sometimes he say, oh, this is just Trump being Trump. But at the end of the day, when you push yourself into these corners or push others into corners, it's not exactly certain how people will react. So, yes, you know, if these games are going to be played on Twitter and that's the only place they're going to be played, that's fine. But also some of these tweets are undercutting our allies and undercutting the trust that we have with some of them. And I think there's a cost to be paid for that.
Let's explore that in terms of the trust with allies. And of course, Australia is one of the US's very strong allies. So far, that alliance has remained fairly strong. The Australian government saying, you know, the alliance is with the United States and we work with the president. But do you worry that behind the scenes there are concerns from traditional allies?
Oh, I do worry. Yes, I mean, I think, you know, again, the U.S. is resilient and our relationship with our allies go back many years and across many different things that we're working on together. I've worked with the Australians around the world and have friendships that will last no matter what our president says to yours. But again, you're tearing away at the fabric here, and over time there's sort of a lack of trust. And one of the big ones last week, for example, is, you know, the NATO depends on the fact that all of us will come to the aid of another if attacked. That's the Article 5 part of the NATO treaty. And the president made a comment about, you know, Montenegro last week, suggesting that the United States might not support them in this case. And that came right out of Vladimir Putin's mouth. And even though that is a comment, those allies depend on that promise, and that promise being kept by presidents since Harry Truman. You know, as that trust starts to erode, and then people have to make choices. If they don't think the United States will come to their aid in a time of trouble, they're going to have to make different choices over time. And those choices don't always benefit us or the alliance.
So at this stage, you're concerned about that relationship eroding or a lack of trust. But until something changes in terms of the kind of statements or decision-making of any of the allies, the president would argue he's got a handle of it.
I'm sure he thinks he's got a handle of everything, but people, Germany and Montenegro and our Baltic friends and others, are going to have to start making their own decisions on to protect themselves from, say, Russian meddling or Russian attacks. And, you know, frankly, the United States benefits from these relationships, benefits from these allies around the world, as you well know. And so for those of us who've worked in the field and work with our allies, we understand that. I mean, our intelligence benefits tremendously from partners around the world providing us insights that we can't get otherwise. And so I think a lot of those of us who worked overseas and worked with allies realize that. And I don't know that he has a good feel for that.
Just finally, what sort of impact on the ground do you think this is all having on U.S. intelligence working somewhere like Iran or the Middle East, this bravado, this very intense rhetoric on Twitter?
That's hard to say. Like, again, I do think our institutions are resilient. I do think, you know, most people are working away, and there's just so much going on that even just President's Twitter things aren't going to affect a lot of the on-the-ground work. But, you know, a lot of the what we call assets, a lot of the people who work for the United States and give them information, you know, spies around the world, often do so because their countries are corrupt, or they understand that the United States represents something special, represents the rule of law, represents an alternative to the kind of countries that they might be in. And if our country starts to be looking that way, not to be taken seriously, or maybe even corrupt in our own right, it does make it less of a good alternative for some people to want to go and work with us. So I do think there is issues that affect our intelligence. I don't think they've been weakened yet, but I do worry over time that, you know, this behavior and this rhetoric and this misunderstanding of how our system works could hurt those relationships.
John Seifer, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
John Seifer is a former CIA official who served in the Senior Intelligence Service. This is RN Drive.